This is Robin Ayoub again, your favorite podcaster, and we're recording another podcast. What else would we do on a Thursday, cold Thursday afternoon in Toronto and sunny Los Angeles with my good buddy, good friend, I just met him, by the way, Ben Perreault. And I really appreciate your time with me, Ben. Welcome to the channel. Good to see you. We've exchanged some emails and some messages, but here we are. We made it happen after all.
Here we are, synchronized in time. It's really nice to get to spend time with you, Robin. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And for the audience, I really appreciate you listening in on this conversation and the rest of the conversations that we do. Today, this episode will be 144 episodes since 2023 when I started this podcast. And I have a good news. Through research, one of the individuals who is going to be a podcast guest in the next coming weeks, he informed me that his publicists have told him that our channel ranked one of the top five globally in conversationalist style podcasting. We're not trying to push any products, vitamins, or what else people out there sells. We're just trying to have conversations with people that leads into knowledge, education, and hopefully tell a good story to people.
That's
so
great.
Thank you so much for joining me,
number.
Ben. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
So Ben, why don't we start with this? For those people who don't know you, just, you know, pretend you're at a bar somewhere. Somebody says to you, "So, hey Ben, how are you? What do you do?"
What do I do? So just very brief sort of history of me. I started my career as a journalist. In fact, I was a music journalist of all things, and then found my way into starting businesses and building products. And then about 10 years ago, I ended up working for a leadership and strategy firm that was started by some very early Apple employees. And in doing so, I was lucky enough to work alongside C-suite leaders in Fortune 50 companies, understand how great leaders tick, just get a little closer to the boardroom, I guess, a little earlier in my career than I would have expected. And in doing so, started to kind of think about how leadership and culture works inside an organization. And I realized that it's all well and good becoming a great leader when you've got lots and lots of access to resources, you've got multiple coaches, all these kinds of people. But what does leadership look like when you're new at it? It's really hard when you're just taking that step from being somebody who doesn't manage anyone to suddenly managing people. And so I'm building Parafoil now, which is a product for mostly early career managers, but anybody who started leading people and is like, what do I do? How do I learn? How do I grow? If you want to be a performant leader, then we believe Parafoil is the best way that you can advance the fastest, because it gives you minute to minute, day to day advice on every single conversation you have with your team. So it sort of almost like rides alongside you to give you the kind of feedback that you might otherwise not get for weeks, months, or even sometimes have to wait until your performance review in a year's time to get. So
that's if you get one, if you get one,
if you get one, not everyone get one.
If you're like me, probably you worked for 23 years, nobody gave you one. That's okay.
It's true. You know, when I started my career, when I first started managing people when I was 24, I didn't even know to ask for feedback from anybody. And so I had to wait until the annual review came around at the end of the year. And then everything was a surprise, because I guess there was too much hubris or maybe a little bit insecurity at the age of 24 to really go and ask for the feedback I needed. Eventually, I got the feedback I needed, maybe in spite of myself, and started to actually start to get better. But it took me 4 or 5 years to even pluck up the courage to be able to start to ask those questions. And that's when I started improving. And so my belief is, if you can tighten the feedback loops, you can learn faster, you can grow faster.
And that's the only way you can learn, by feedback, right? So I mean, how else would you
right.
You need you need that light that guides you into of information, in this case, that guides you into what's next.
Yeah, you need a light, you need some guidance, some advice, some help. And sometimes the folks in your direct sort of cone of influence, whether they're your direct reports or whether they're your stakeholders, aren't always the people you feel most comfortable asking for whatever reason. And so sometimes it's good to have a private space to ask those questions.
Absolutely. Now, initially when the idea came out, and I was just going to ask you, what problem did you try to solve? And you probably pretty much described it. What was the spark? How did you say to yourself, beside the experience that you went into, described that you got into, is that like pandemic everywhere? Is it like everybody is going through the same thing now? How widespread this is for a problem that we require a solution of such Parafoil?
Yeah, good question, Robin. You know, the initial observation came to me when I was a strategy consultant and I realized how important the frontline and managers are. They're really critical to any organization. In fact, increasingly, I think they're becoming the most important role in an organization. They're where culture is held. They're where the entirety of leadership expectations are bearing down on them like a lightning rod. From everyone from the CEO to directors are saying, how are you doing? What are you doing? And then, of course, they still have to do the player coach role. So they're having to do the individual contributor work as well as the player work, as well as the management work. And I think during the pandemic, that sort of compounded the challenges we're facing, and that people started to do more and more remote work. We became a bit more disconnected from one another. I also am learning that many, you know, over the course of developing this, that many managers are getting greater and greater burden placed on them. Some people are being asked to manage 5 people, 10 people, 15 people, now 20 direct reports, I think is the average that Dell are asking for everybody under the VP level. So once you're managing 20 people, your surface area just goes up exponentially. And so how do you manage across that level of surface area when you're new to leadership, new to management? I think it's almost an impossible task for many people. And for so many folks, you know, who have been fantastic, maybe even gifted technically in their own field for whatever they're doing, whether they're a product manager or a marketing manager or whether they're working in design, maybe they're a content strategist, suddenly they were really fantastic writers. But, you know, leading people is a completely different set of skills. And I think the fundamental premise behind what we're building is leadership is not just an extension of what you're doing, but it's a completely new set of disciplines that you need to go and acquire, a completely new set of skills that you need to go and acquire. And you can't just do what you did before. And so in learning that, we set about trying to create the support and the reflection that people need to be able to get good at that.
You've almost been describing a situation where leadership can be taught versus born with.
Right.
What's your comments on that?
Yeah. My belief is that leadership is a calling that not all of us should choose. And often companies use it as a way to retain people, or people use it as a way to get paid more. Those are not necessarily great reasons to go and choose to lead. I'm also somebody who learned leadership through praxis. So putting what I was learning into motion and then getting feedback on it in loops was kind of how I learned. It's just that those loops took a lot longer without the benefit of any tools. And so my belief is you have to have the orientation to want to lead. You have to be compelled to want to lead and not just feel like it's the only way to go and get paid more money in your career path. And if you choose to do that, then obviously there are ways to get better at it. And so I don't think that leadership is a gift that some of us have and some of us don't. And I think that's kind of maybe what's
behind. Or something to aspire to in some cases, right?
Yeah. Well, exactly. It's not always something to aspire to, right? Many of the greatest leaders are usually the people who are willing to do the work that nobody else wants to do, you know? And so I think you have to be really in your guts, feel like it's the thing that you want to do, feel like you want to be able to work with people, feel like you feel like you can create storytelling and all the kind of leadership skills that you think you can use to try and help people work together on a mission that you think is important, you know.
And if you're talking to the wrong individual sometimes, like in a management position, right? So when you try to convince one of your employees to take up a leadership position, I've seen it before where that conversation can turn really ugly because the individual is so scared of the word leader that I have to lead. And the word leader, by definition, it means you have to carry responsibilities, not just one, many in some cases. Mm. And that causes a burden on people. And so for that matter, you know, this is where if you're made for this job, you're going to embrace it. You're going to say, wow, hallelujah, I've been waiting for this for many years. And here it comes. Mm. And for those who are voluntold in some cases, they get really upset about this one. What do you think of that?
It's true. You know, the Chartered Institute of Managers in the UK surveyed 3,500 managers in 2023, and they found that 82% of managers consider themselves to be accidental managers, people who have just arrived here by some happenstance. They're not quite sure exactly how they encountered this, but now they're all of a sudden, that word leadership is being used to describe them. And it wasn't necessarily something they chose, nor is it something they feel like they've been adequately supported to. You know, I also think at a societal level, we hero leadership in this way. You know, we create so much societal value around the idea of leadership that it's almost like, well, why would you not want to go and be a leader? Everyone says that, you know, why would you not want to go and, you know, be at the top of the pyramid? Why would you not? And actually, that feels like an unfair way to characterize leadership. And I think, you know, there are some people for whom they've become a leader and realize they are in retrospect, and they just realize that, you know, you kind of look over your shoulder and you realize that you're leading some people. That's great if you feel like you have the stomach for it. There are some people who've been thrust into position and maybe shouldn't. And my belief is it's not for everyone.
It's not for everyone.
It's a choice you have to actively make, right?
100%. It's not for everyone.
It's not for everyone. And I think choosing to make it the default career path feels wrong to me if you think about it from first principles.
I think from the outside looking in, for those who are not in leadership position and they look at a leader, they see the some you know, sliver of glamour in it.
The glamour, yeah.
But the end result is when they get into the position, they realize, oh, I'm a servant to everybody else. Then yes. What?
That's right. Then what do you do? Yeah, it's so disappointing, isn't it? When you suddenly find out that when you're leading people, that comes with a whole lot of admin for a start, and then it comes with all of this internal work that you have to do to try and understand how you're perceived and how your own individual leadership needs to show up. And actually, that forces you to kind of look inward in a way that some people, I think, it's really uncomfortable. But also, some people are just so good at the job, they should continue to do the job that they're doing and not necessarily be leading folks. And I think those who are the best at their individual contributor role, we need to create more pathways, more ways for individuals who are amazing at their technical proficiency to be able to continue to do that further up the chain, to earn more money, to be able to take on more responsibility without feeling like it all has to converge into this idea of leadership, I think.
So let's talk a little bit about Parafoil and the mechanics of Parafoil. How does it work?
Yeah.
First, how did you come up with the name Parafoil? What's the significance of it?
Yeah, you know, the Parafoil is what the space shuttle used when it came into land. And instead of just using a parachute, a parafoil gives you way more precision when you're thinking about how you're going to land. So you get more control over where you land, how you land, what direction you go into. You have more of a kind of a foil. You know, the idea of a foil is it's like a partner to you. You know, so parafoil just gives you that ability to be able to work more precisely than you'd be able to otherwise. And so we think of Parafoil as the instrumentation layer for leadership. Mm-hmm. You know, we call it leadership intelligence. My belief is that in every other field, there is some kind of instrumentation for you, some kind of telemetry. You know, at one point we were all, for example, pilots. Pilots, when flying was first invented, would have kind of like a couple of pedals and maybe a wheel, and that was all they really had, you know, in the early days. And then since then, you go and sit in a cockpit now, and it's full of all of this complex instrumentation because flying is a precision role that has the impact on the lives of a lot of people. Well, turns out leadership also has the impact of the lives of a lot of people. And so we believe that there needs to be an instrumentation layer, maybe not as complex as the cockpit, but something so that you get access to the instrumentation that you might need to be able to go and get better.
Absolutely. Now, how does it work?
Yeah. So at the moment, the way Parafoil works is you install Parafoil onto your desktop, or soon we'll have a mobile app, and you instruct it to analyze the conversations that you want it to. So when you have meetings with your team, be they one-to-ones or team meetings, you tell Parafoil, these are the meetings I want you to analyze, and these are the people I want you to analyze with, and then you seek their consent to make sure that they're comfortable with that. And then Parafoil sort of leaps into action and analyzes those conversations for you. And then using our proprietarily tuned AI model, and Parafoil captures those conversations and then shares with you a report, almost like a retro or a report out, within about 5 minutes of every single conversation that you have with your team. And so you can look at that report, you can get it via email, you can get it via Slack. You can also go and look at your dashboard and see how you're doing. You get way more detail that way. So you can see, like, here are some choices, here's some advice for what you might be able to do differently as a result of what Parafoil has observed. So it may say, hey, listen, in this moment, like I was in a conversation recently where Parafoil observed that maybe I was being a little bit defensive about some feedback. You know, I'm very passionate about Parafoil, so it's possible that I am, but I wasn't aware of it at the time. So I was like, hmm. And so I got the feedback from Parafoil, and I actually cut paste the feedback and forwarded it onto the person who I was in a meeting with. And I said, hey, listen, really sorry if I came across as at all defensive in that meeting, but it looks like I might have been. And I just want you to know, like, I'm really passionate about the thing we're building. And so I'm really grateful for the feedback. Thanks for letting me know. And that was a moment where he immediately replied and was like, well, yeah, of course, you should be passionate and you weren't being defensive. I mean, I may have been defensive, but he was being kind. And so that was a moment where we got to build the relationship a little bit more, because he saw that I was invested in my own growth, and I was introduced to the idea that maybe I was a little bit more defensive than I was planning on being. And so that's kind of how Parafoil works. It observes how you lead and then gives you advice for how you can lead better in the minute to minute, in the day to day, rather than having to go and do that in a training course or some other way.
Oh, absolutely. I hear you say, evaluate my conversation and let me know how I perform. I can use this software in many applications, to be honest with you. You know, I can use it with a conversation with my wife. I can use it with, I see a lot of improvement happening after the use of this application. But internally, like if you're having a over the phone conversation, or I'm assuming it's dedicated to like video conferencing or I want to say similar application like Zoom or any of the other video teams and that kind of thing. Is that what it's dedicated for? Or
Parafoil at the moment runs on your desktop, so it works across Teams, Zoom, WebEx, Google Meet, any of those platforms, FaceTime. So if you have anything that involves your desktop machine, whether it's video or audio, it doesn't matter. Parafoil will analyze it when you want it to analyze it, and you can start, stop, delete all of the contents. You have full control over it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a mobile app we're working on right now. And so early in the new year, we will have access to that mobile app. So you can literally in person put the app down on the desk in the meeting room and you can hit the red button and Powerful will analyze that conversation for you as well. So we're working towards more and more in-person uses. But yeah, to begin with, it's just been much easier to insert ourselves into the digital layer. In the future, people are starting to use things like pendants and, you know, devices that they wear on them. People have got, you know, smart sunglasses and those kinds of things now. I don't know how those things will play out in terms of the hardware devices and how they work. But if that becomes something that people use frequently and we can make sure that there's a good consent layer in there for everybody to be able to handle how their data is used,
mm-hmm.
then Powerful will be in those contexts as well, just to make it easier for you to analyze more of your leadership.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, like, regarding the data retention, reuse, et cetera, how do you handle that between customers?
Yeah, so we're fully SOC 2 compliant, which means that we have a high grade of information security, which is held by a very high standard by the market leader Vanta, which we've employed for our SOC 2 certificate. So on all of the information security and privacy stuff, we meet all of the industry standards over there. From a privacy perspective, Powerful runs a unique instance of the model for every enterprise we work with or every individual we work with. And so you get your own version, which is walled off and siloed from any other version of the model. So there's no way that the model can look at the content or the data from anybody else that's using Powerful at the same time. So imagine you're in a siloed private space. And so you can't see anybody else's data and nobody else can see yours. Moreover, we've also walled off a lot of the data between HR and the managers. So if an enterprise chooses to use Powerful, the individual manager gets access to their own dashboard and they can see everything that's going on. But until the enterprise has 10 users, they don't get access to the empirical view of what's happening across the organization. Once they do have 10 users, then they can see at large what leadership styles are being used across the organization, what traits are being used across the organization. Nothing that's individual, nothing that's private.
So Ben, on that note, so you're dedicating this to enterprise users and individual users? Is that who the customer is?
Yeah, so individual managers can use Powerful and that's how most people are using it right now. So you can go to powerful.co and get a monthly subscription and individual users can do that right away. Most people use their learning and development stipend if they have one. So it just makes it easy for you to go and use your company credit card and so on.
Yeah,
that's why we do the SOC 2
equipment. Ben, if you have a code or something, you can share it with me after the podcast and I'll share it on the
team. I will do that. Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to do that. Yeah. We'd love to offer your listeners 40% off the list price, actually, because that would be a really cool thing to do. And then enterprises can also get access to Powerful. So they come in and that's more on a kind of contract basis. And then they offer seats to their team and then their team elects to use it or not. So more often than not, we tend to find those seats get taken up pretty quickly once an enterprise makes it available.
So let's move, Ben, to the discussion around success and measuring of the success.
Yeah.
You know, do you track? Do you report? Do you measure progress over time? Do you report that back to the user or their managers in the case of enterprise, I guess?
Yeah. So there are two ways that Powerful looks at how you're doing. The first thing is we have a sort of place where you can share your goals as an individual, the things you're working on, the things you've agreed with your manager. And so you can share those things with Powerful so that Powerful helps you work towards them. But we also have what we call the Leadership Effectiveness Index, which is a measure that we use internally to understand how your leadership is performing from one week to the next. And so we measure four criteria. We measure the quality of clarity you're creating with your team. So are you being clear in your communication and are they clearly understanding what you're talking about? On both sides, we measure that. The quality of alignment between you and your team. So how good is the language pattern matching? How well aligned are you on the goals you're working on, the things that are important? We measure feedback moments in both directions and we actually weight the feedback you receive higher than the feedback you give. So if you're cultivating moments to receive more feedback, we score you more highly on that. And then also we measure your supportiveness. So how supportive are you being with your team? And across all each one of those four different criteria, we give you a score out of 100 and then you track that from one week to the next. So some weeks you'll be amazingly supportive because that's what's required of you. Some weeks you'll be much more about clarity and that's what's required of you. But overall that tends to balance out across those four criteria. And we use that as an index just for the internal use, so that you can say, hey, listen, here's how I'm doing as a leader over time.
I don't mean to diminish, but maybe the comparison is very valid when I say it's almost comparison, it is equal to somebody who has a diet goals in mind and they track, yeah. They track their, you know, their consumption, they track their exercise, they track their sleep patterns. and the data collected tells them how are they doing in terms of their goals.
Yeah, that's not a diminishment of it at all, Robin. A lot of us use an Oura Ring or Strava to measure how we're doing from an athletics perspective. Peter Drucker said, that which measured gets managed. So if you really want to improve your leadership, then you really need to start to measure it. And so that's what we're doing. We're giving you a measurement layer in the same way that if you, you know, folks who are focused on losing weight, you know, once you start to think about the calories and the protein, you get your macros right, then you start to notice that shifts start to happen. That's just how it goes. You know, behavioral change happens in the incremental day-to-day, step-by-step. So we're just trying to do the same thing actually, but for leadership.
Now, the other point I was going to try to bring to you is the idea is that the traditional way of managing managers, it was example, 360 reviews. Now, when you, as a manager, send a bunch of forms to your colleagues, your equals, et cetera, and you seek their feedback. And I always thought the 360 review was flawed.
Mm.
Although I participated in it many years, but I always thought it was flawed. Why? Is because I feel like if you want to be completely honest with somebody, you probably have this second feeling, at least for me, that I'm insulting them or I'm not doing them a service toward their goals, whatever their goals there are. Like, am I preventing them from taking a promotion, or am I preventing them from getting a raise, or whatever the case may be? Vested interest as a human to see my colleague do better. But if I'm being completely honest, I'm not doing them any favors. So I think this here, you're just using the words they're speaking or their behavior they're exhibiting, and you're playing it back to them in a confidential manner so they can learn from it. I'm just looking at your opinion versus traditional versus innovative.
Yeah, it's really hard for me to let go of my own biases and my own agenda when I'm sharing feedback with somebody. I'm sure you and I, when we filled out those 360 feedback reviews, have done our best to try and be as candid as we feel like we could, because ultimately we over time realize that if we're committed to their growth, hearing the feedback is the only way they're actually going to start to grow and get better. But it is really hard to do that. I feel like so many of us want to be kind or nice, and you know, we heard it in the last few years, you know, this idea of radical candor isn't always something that everybody's able to deploy at the moment when you need to. Powerful is designed as a way to create more objectivity. Of course, no AI is without bias, but to try and create more objectivity because it's not so connected to the emotional outcomes there. And so we share back reflections on things you've said and then observe how you might shift your behavior on the basis of that. And yeah, there's no human in the loop on the kind of day-to-day, only humans in the loop in terms of building the model. And so that means that you can safely assume that what you're hearing is no one's pulling any punches, let's say that.
No, because it's your own words. I mean, it's pretty straight. There is no more honesty than that.
Right. And actually, with Powerful, you can go back and listen to what you said. You can actually hear yourself saying it, which I hesitate to do because I hate hearing my own voice. But you're able to go and do it just in case you're in complete denial about whether or not you said it or not.
Yeah. Now, for Powerful, just give us some idea, like how long you've been in business. You have customers. Are you in alpha? You're in beta right now. Are you commercializing?
Yeah, we're commercializing. We started building the product in January 2024, and we spent the first year pretty focused on building the kind of core models and the behavioral science, the ontology that kind of sits underneath Powerful. And then for the last sort of 6 to 8 months, we were really focused on building the product. I would say we've had customers and a stable product now for about the last 6 months. We're well funded as a startup, so we're sort of on the process now towards continuing to generate and get the word out there and make sure more people know. We have a bunch of enterprise customers. We have a bunch of individual customers. Obviously, you know, we would love to have more. And so the work right now, I think for us, is continue to improve the product so that it becomes better and better, more accurate. You know, it needs to feel like something that really sees you. And so we're continuing to do that. Make it available in more context. We need to move from just being a Mac product to being a Windows product and working with tools beyond Google Calendar as well next year. And so we're in the process of just creating more surface areas so that more and more people can use Powerful, because you know the ones who do love it and they love using it every day.
Now, one of the questions that every company in an innovation space that you are in would probably keep in mind, and I don't know, I'm trying to get your feedback on that one, is what trends are you watching for closely and as you build for the future? And I think you've answered one of them. You want to move from Mac to PC environment. And you mentioned earlier, like the cognitive and the behavioral sciences, that it's the foundation of the platform, which is quite the achievement, to be honest with you, to be able to embed all these fundamental rules of cognitive thinking, cognitive behavior into a platform such as this one. I'm assuming there are some trends that you're watching for, and I'm assuming that this will evolve over time. What are the major ones?
You know, there are definitely technology trends that we're watching. The major one being, how are the large language models shifting over each version? And to what extent are they starting to plateau in terms of their capabilities? You know, we've tuned our own so that it's custom built with all of the leadership knowledge, cognitive science, behavioral science, and actually a lot of like childhood psychology, which is the core of a lot of leadership science, is embedded in there, believe it or not. And so all of that stuff, along with all the leadership literature that we've put in there, so that people have access to the knowledge that's kind of at the heart of that. But, you know, the major shifts I think that are really happening at the moment are more industrial and behavioral than they are technological. You know, as is ever the case, technology is just there to try and solve people problems. And so I think the two major things that are shifting now are, how is the ecology changing around comfort with AI tools, and how extensively is everybody wanting to do more, achieve more, use AI to do that? I think that's been shifting really fast as we see the potential for them. Mm-hmm. And then the biggest trend that's important for us is, how is the role of the manager changing? You know, we saw Dell's announcement about 6 weeks ago that they want people to go, you know, everyone under the director level to be managing up to 20 direct reports. And so when you're managing 20 people, what does your job look like in that context? And so I think that's the thing that's shifting the most: return to office or not return to office, staying remote, and the shift in the role of the manager. That's the stuff that's really the most dynamic for us, because it's getting really intense out there, I think, for a lot of leaders. There's a lot of organizations that are trying to flatten the structure. Mm-hmm. And in doing so, you're putting more and more pressure on individuals that I think at some point, unless we support them more adequately, it's going to become a bursting point.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the future and a few things that you're going after, but I couldn't help by asking the following question: is that most innovators, they create something for global markets, and I don't know where you stand on this one. Is Powerful only available in English, or are you targeting other jurisdiction or other markets around the world in the developing countries, etc., which has a lot more population, a lot more economy, and you probably get a bigger bang for the buck in terms of commercializing the business, right?
You know, we've always, you know, as somebody who is sort of cross-cultural, cross-border, I guess you would call me a third culture kid, you know, Malaysian dad, English mother, British person living in the United States. I'm definitely somebody who never has felt like I'm from anywhere, nor do I belong anywhere. And so as grateful as I am to be able to, you know, to be able to do this work at this moment in time, I think it's important for us to recognize that Parafoil and management and leadership are all designed to kind of work in a more international context. And so it is a product that's focused mostly on the English-speaking business world right now. We've focused that that direction. We've kind of constrained it deliberately because we want to make it really good for those folks. But we know that in the future, when there's business that's being done in Hindi, or there's business that's being done in Bahasa, or there's business that's being done
Chinese,
in other languages,
whatever.
Chinese, yep, all sorts of languages, Spanish, you know, we know that they will be next. And a lot of the cognitive science models that were built originally, you know, the psycholinguistic models, were actually tested in multiple languages, and they tend to work across most languages. We might have to make some cultural changes. You know, one of the things I learned about moving from the UK to California is just how different everyone operates. We might speak the same language, but culturally those business contexts are just so different. I'm sure it's the same in Toronto too.
Absolutely.
You know, we have our own observations about what it's like working in different contexts. And so I think we're going to have to tune Parafoil more for the individual contexts in which we operate, both in terms of the channels, not just meetings, but also email and Slack and these other places, but also business cultures. Mm-hmm. You know, I spent a bit of time working in Japan, and the business culture in Japan is obviously very different from the business culture in the United States.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. So, but yeah, we're going to get there, I think.
So from your perspective right now for Parafoil 2026, we're wrapping up the year. So what is the major objective for the new year for Parafoil and Ben and his team for the year? So you must have like an overarching big idea for 2026. What would that be?
I mean, right now I'm somebody who feels just so excited and passionate about the product we've built with Parafoil that I just want to tell the world about it. And I think that's how every entrepreneur feels. And so most of the
You're welcome back to the channel anytime you want to tell more stories.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I would love to come back. So I'm just completely enthused by what I think is possible. And so my first few weeks, months of 2026 I'm going to be focused on that. Then the next thing to do is, how do we continue to really tune Parafoil, fine tune the output that you get so that it just feels like it really sees you? And I think that's the thing that it does a little bit of at the moment, but we're going to continue to refine over the course of the next year. And then, you know, we're going to focus on making it available on Windows, which we haven't done yet. It's not a Windows available product yet, and make it available to Outlook users. It's not an Outlook users product yet. So we will figure all those things out as the year flies by. But I'm excited about next year. I think it's going to be a really interesting time for people who are working in leadership. And I think there's an opportunity to really try and, you know, leap into 2026 and try and do the best we can with it. Yeah.
Now for our listeners, do you consider Parafoil a single use case, a vertical specific, or a horizontal service? Cross industries, I mean.
Yeah, I think Parafoil is cross industries. So it's about leadership, and whether you lead in a tech company, or you lead an industrial company, or you lead your business, leadership doesn't matter. Leadership is a discipline that all of us can continue to refine and improve. So industrially, it works across everything. It's very focused on leadership. You mentioned earlier there might be other uses for this kind of technology. I think that's absolutely true. And I think all of us will get used to finding a way to get feedback and reflection from AI in the future. But we're very focused on leadership. We want to build the best. In fact, we're in a leadership development company first and an AI company second. And so what we really care about is improving the lives of leaders and their teams everywhere.
Absolutely. And as AI improves, I'm assuming you have a plan for that, right? So AI is still on the development path where we're, you know, every day we're improving. And as supercomputers get better, we will get a little bit more advanced and results will be a little bit more accurate. We get a little bit more intuitive in our output from an AI perspective. Where do you see, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down the road as AI matures, continue to mature, sir?
Yeah. You know, today, most people are using AI as a content tool to give them reflection, understand what's going on. You know, a lot of us are using the chat-based tools. Parafoil is not one of those chat-based tools. It's a leadership development tool. But but tomorrow, I think, we're going to start to see, you know, the next feature we're rolling out on Parafoil is some recommendations for what to do next after each meeting. So maybe follow up because that was a little bit of a stressful meeting. Maybe you took on an action to go and do something, to go and find out something about somebody's performance and go and run a 360 review for them. So it actually helps, it prompts you to go and take those actions because you said you would. I think as we move into next year, Parafoil and I think a lot of products are going to start to actually say, hey, listen, do you want me to book that follow-up for you? And all you'd have to do is say yes. And then over time, I wonder whether you'll start to trust Parafoil to be able to take on some of the grunt work around your leadership for you. So it's always about augmenting you as an individual. But, you know, this idea of agentic workflows, I guess, is what everybody's talking about now. And what does that mean for us? It's like, can you do more with less? I think, you know, everyone's under pressure to do more with less. How can we do that in a way that still feels humane, still feels thoughtful, still feels like you're building a leadership discipline that's really about people and not just about sticking a load of bots in the loop and hoping they do everything for you.
In the past, sorry, I'm smiling. In the past, I used to, you know, in the old ways, you would do this kind of work versus agentic. We used to call them hamsters in the wheel.
I love that term. Yeah, it makes sense.
So now what we have is agentic. It's that whole obsession with people, like, you'd see, you know, like the most watched YouTube videos are robots. You know, somebody, robots helping them in the kitchen or helping them in that. Yeah. But that's a behavioral thing that is being inherited by DNA. I don't know what it is, but it's being inherited. People are passing it from one thing to another. Instead of having 20 servants in the house, now I've got like 20 robots and 20 agents doing my work. We did a podcast. It was pretty interesting. I did two podcasts on the idea of bots talking to bots and the humans are out at Starbucks doing whatever the heck they want to do. And one of them is, it was like, I think it was on hiring people. So the applicants or the candidates are using bots to enhance the image, to put a better resume out. And believe it or not, I heard somebody was telling me that there is a bot about, instead of making your resume perfect, they inject a human-based error in it. So the audience on the other side knows that that's a human who did that. And on the recruiting side, for instance, there is a bot analyzing all this. And if you talk to the recruiter, they're not in the room to talk to the candidates. They're just like, letting the bot do whatever the bot does. So the point is, I was trying to make is, agentic craze right now, it's driven by what you just said. People like, they want to do more with less, but there is a underlying human element of laziness in there too.
Yes.
Where we are perhaps outsourcing too much to the agent and taking their outputs as, outputs. It's outputted by the agent. It must be true. So we're not even bothering looking at it.
Yeah, I have opinions. You know, a lot of technology is built by technologists, obviously. And we as technologists have a bias towards believing that technology can solve all the world's problems. But more often than not, most of the innovations that have had the most amount of fiscal impact in the world have been better advertising or a better CRM. Those things are all very helpful, but they've changed the world economically, but not necessarily in the ways that I think we as technologists believe are as profound as they really are. You know, I think a lot of technologists are saying, let's disintermediate humans from the world of work and let's just have a network of like microbots just going and doing everyone's job. My opinion is good luck to you. You know, I think it's going to be really hard to disintermediate the human being from the role entirely, not least because AI is really just another expression of our desire to be able to do more, achieve more, you know, just another piece of technology. You think about the spreadsheet, which was another piece of technology that arrived at some point, or GPS. Both of those things have taken over. You know, you talked about the atrophy of the way we think. GPS is a fantastic example. I no longer can drive to the shops without running a GPS system. You know, GPS is a great expression of that. But, you know, the thing that hasn't changed about GPS is knowing where you want to go and why you want to go there. All it really does is tell you how to get there. And so we as technologists build a wonderful how to get there all the time. We're brilliant at that. But we haven't yet really got good at the why and the who and the what. So a lot of that stuff is stuff that I think, you know, we sort of only really look at that one sphere of reality. And so the reason why I think, you know, understanding how to lead better is so important, understanding how to be a better human at work is so important, understanding how to be a performant leader is important, is because I think we will get flatter organizations. People will be asked to do more with less. But I don't see a world where it suddenly becomes, hey, I've incorporated my company in, you know, Delaware, and all of a sudden I've hired these 16 robots to go and do the job and there's no humans involved and everything. We're just printing money. I can't see that world, honestly. I can see a world where I can see you can do more with less people, but I think that's a different world to the one that a lot of technologists suddenly think is going to arrive.
That's right. You know, you've been very, you know, very good point on, you always have a human in the loop. We call them in our industry, human in the loop. But where does the human fit? I think that's the whole struggle right now is you've got an entire process. Consider any process as a conveyor belt process type. And the struggle is, because we still need a human and human is well needed in any process, you still need to figure out a way where to exactly scientifically inject the human in the process. And the debate is that I'm always here is if I inject them too early, I'm spending too much. If I inject them too late, I'm losing too much. So that sweet spot where to exactly put the human in the loop in the entire process is still trying to be figured out. And because of the fluidity of the processes and no process is equal to another, makes it a lot more challenging.
Yeah, you certainly at the moment you need human judgment to be able to make those kinds of choices.
100%.
Right? Because they come down to things that I think, you know, if we continue to use AI to the extent which I think we both anticipate we will see emerging into the middle. You know, everything seems to move into the median. If you get an LLM to write email for you, it writes a perfectly serviceable email, but it doesn't write anything that's particularly fantastic. It just writes something that works. And as we continue to move to the middle, it's going to demand of us that we think more about taste and judgment and our contextual knowledge of how these things impact people. And those are the kinds of things where I believe AI is going to continue to struggle, because taste, for example, or the judgment about where you put the human in the loop and how you choose to mechanize the process to be able to create the most amount of, you know, value for people is a question of not just experience, but also just your judgment as an individual. And I think that's the area where, you know, we're going to see more pressure around skills. I think people are going to need to continue to develop things like their own individual taste to differentiate themselves from a writing point of view, from a design point of view, you know, just generally. So I think to your point that there are areas where we need people and we'll continue to for the foreseeable future.
Yeah. Well, as we wrap the conversation, Ben, I want to thank you so much. But before I let you go, I want to make sure I understood, and hopefully for the audience will be captured well. I want to go through this, and hopefully Ben can score me if I did well or not. So from what I understand from our conversation today, if I can summarize, Parfoil is a way for individuals who are in management position to assess how are they doing, not intrusively. This is one-on-one, an application that gets loaded on their laptop or on their mobile device and gives them feedback on conversations that they can activate themselves. They can say, I want you to be listening in, sort of like fireflies and all this stuff that we see on the Zoom or any team meetings or Google Meet. And it gives you that action plan after the meeting. Here's what you've done well, sort of heat map the conversation. Here's what you've done well. Here's what you need to improve on. Here's the action items that I want you to do. And I will set some reminders for you if you've done these action items or not. And in addition, once you've loaded the application on your laptop or your mobile phone, there is a status of who you are now, and it measures your progress as you use the software as you move forward. Did I miss anything, and how did I do?
Robin, that's the perfect summation of Parafoil. Honestly, you've got it in one. I appreciate the readout. Yeah, that's exactly how it works. And you know, you mentioned fireflies. Parafoil works without intruding on your meetings, so you don't see a bot in the meeting or anything like that. It doesn't sit there and vie for your attention. It doesn't distract you from the work you're doing. You seek consent with the people you're working with, and it gets on with its work, you know, without bothering you.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So I want to thank you, Ben, for the conversation I've had. I've had fun learning and talking to you at the same time. I really appreciate it.
I've had great fun talking to you, Robin. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Appreciate that. And for the audience, I want to thank you so much for listening in. I really appreciate it. The episode so far, we're averaging 1,200 downloads per day. And I'm very grateful for all of you, for the listeners, for the comments, and for ranking, I think, one of the top five conversationalists. Based podcast in the world. So it's pretty good. We're not trying to push any products or services. I'm not selling vitamins, but I love to talk to people such as Ben Perot, who joined me all the way from California today. Thank you for your time. I wish you lots of success. And if anybody needs to get a hold of Ben, I am connected to Ben on LinkedIn. Please reach out to me if you can't find him. He's on LinkedIn as well. But if you can't find Ben, or for some reason you can't get a hold of him, reach out to me and I'll do the introduction. I'll be happy to do an introduction for you. Thank you so much. And for the audience, I'll see you at the next episode.